As evening darkens into night, lights come on in the skyscrapers of a waterfront cityscape. The lights merge to form the words, Miramax Films. Three downward-pointed chevrons on a black background. The logo of the Weinstein Company. Over black, a thin transparent band like a window looking out onto a cloud-filled sky. The logo of Stratus Film Company. Three stylized strips of film come together to form the logo of DEJ Productions. The swirly logo of Equity Pictures. Miramax Films and the Weinstein Company present, and Stratus Film Company and DEJ Productions present, in association with Equity Pictures, Median Fonds GmbH and Co., KG11 and Syndicate, a First Films Irish Dreamtime production. A film by Richard Shepherd.
73 degrees on this beautiful morning at 6:59 in the a.m. Well, enjoy Mr. Sunshine while you can, friends, because AccuWeather is predicting thunderstorms tomorrow. So it's time to wake up and enjoy the day. Wake up! Wake up, Julian! 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 Julian!
A man wakes with a start, his eyes flickering from side to side. Julian, a man in his late 40s, with a neatly clipped moustache and spiky brown hair beginning to grey, lies propped up against his pillow with a haunted look. He brings his hand to his face. He wears a black stone ring on his fourth finger, round his neck a gold chain. He has a tattoo on his right shoulder. A bottle of whiskey stands on the bedside table. He props himself up on his arms, his lower half covered by the bedsheet. He touches his bare chest. He presses his hand to his eyes, then glances over his shoulder, and with a detached expression, lies back on the bed to take a closer look at the attractive young woman fast asleep beside him. He draws up closer and peers at her face. With his forefinger, he lifts the edge of the sheet and takes a peek underneath at her smooth, tanned buttocks. He watches her legs untwist to reveal plum red varnish on her toenails. Julian knits his brows in puzzlement. He tips out the contents of the woman's bag. His eyes light on her nail varnish. He picks it up with relish and sits on the end of the bed painting his toenails. Pierce Brosnan, Greg Kinnear, Hope Davis star in The Matador, and over a sequence of bullfighting footage, more credits appear. Philip Baker Hall, Dylan Baker, Adam Scott. In his bathroom, Julian, sitting on the side of the bath, burns a 10x8 photograph. Co-producers Ricardo Del Rio, Stephen Brake, costume designer Catherine Thomas, music Frankie Pine, Rolf Kent. Editor Carol Kravitz-Akanian. Production designer Rob Pearson. Director of photography David Tatrell, BSc. In his hotel room, Julian peels off some notes from a wad of dollars and lays them on the dressing table. He leaves the room. Executive producers Bob Yarry, Mark Gordon, Adam Merrins, Andreas Tiesmeyer, Josef Lautenschlager, Andy Reimer. Written and directed by Richard Shepherd. Produced by Piers Brosnan, Beau Sinclair, Sean First and Brian First. Later, Julian, dressed in a tan-coloured suede loose jacket over a black shirt and trousers, peers over his newspaper at a shiny black Porsche parked alongside a green sward. A boy with an American football under his arm comes up to him.
Hey, mister. Is that your car?
What?
The cool Porsche. You keep staring at it.
Why don't you shoot?
I don't want to shoot.
Didn't your mother tell you never to talk to strangers?
She's over there, and she says that I should talk to you.
She did?
Yeah. She wants to know what you're doing here. I think she thinks you're cute.
I don't know anything about that car. And I'm only interested in your mother if she lost 20 pounds in 30 years, so I'd really like it if you just got the fuck away from me. Thank you very much.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Goodbye, skadoodle.
See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya.
Smell ya. Shouldn't have to tell ya.
Julian scowls, then turns his attention to the Porsche and a man in a business suit coming out of the glass office block behind it. The man checks his watch as he comes down the steps, talking into his mobile. Julian watches carefully, then gets up and, ducking his head, walks under the trees bordering the patch of green and starts to walk with a more vigorous pace. The boy's mother, seated on a bench, looks up from her book and smiles at Julian as he comes by, putting on his sunglasses. Julian appears not to notice the blazing inferno behind him. The boy looks from the burning car to Julian rapidly disappearing around a corner. A bold caption in blue letters reads, "Denmark." A man in his late 30s wakes up in the dark and shuts his eyes as he turns on his bedside lamp. He raises himself up from his pillow, his eyes still shut. As he straightens up, he removes his earplugs and eyeshade. He silences the radio and glances over his shoulder at the blonde-haired woman sleeping by his side. His face creases into a soulfully affectionate smile as he gazes at her. He puts on his wire-in specs and scratches his head. He slides his bare feet into a pair of soft slippers. A little later in his kitchen, he sits at the end of a long table, eating some breakfast.
Bean, you're up early?
Thunder woke me up. I wanted to see you before you left.
Bean nuzzles her husband's neck.
I'm gonna miss that.
Me too. I'm gonna miss everything.
It's only two nights.
With this weather and our luck, it scares me.
Honey, you know I gotta go, but I'm coming home to you in 2 days. With really good news, I promise.
He gets up to kiss her.
Oh.
He cracks a smile.
Sure you have time?
Well, maybe not for dinner and a movie, but...
He undoes his flies and she sits on the end of the table. They look towards the kitchen window and Danny pulls Bean to safety as a tree crashes in. The storm carries on unabated. In the corner of their kitchen, the couple slowly sit up and stare at the gaping hole where the kitchen wall had stood just moments before. Danny smiles wryly.
Still horny?
Bean, her long blonde hair spilling over her shoulders, starts to grin and buries her head in his shoulder. Later, hurrying along a wet pavement, Danny drops one of the two bags he's holding. He picks it up and, wheeling a bigger case behind him, he goes into a crowded railway station concourse. Danny hurries over to a man in the ticket queue.
So sorry, Phil.
That's fine, it's fine. Is Bean all right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the fire department's over there. Her crazy neighbors, the tyrannous sets. She's fine, really. She effectively forced me to get over here.
She knows what this job means, right?
Well, she knows somebody has to pay for a new kitchen.
Now we just better make this flight, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, we will. We have to.
Hope the weather's better in Mexico.
As the two men shuffle forward in the queue, Julian comes down an escalator to one side of them. Wearing a grey suit, open-neck black shirt and dark glasses, and carrying a black bag, he walks past the queue up to the first-class check-in desk of Mex Air. Removing his shades, he hands the attractive dark-haired check-in attendant his ticket while checking out her cleavage and name tag.
Mr. Noble, how are you today?
Couldn't be better. But more importantly, how are you? Genevieve.
She gives him a wary smile. Julian shrugs, unabashed. In a sun-drenched city, a man with long black hair, wearing a white suit and carrying an aluminium case, walks briskly across a footbridge close to an airport. A caption in red letters says, "Mexico City." As the man walks across the Zócalo, the city's largest square, past the colonial-style cathedral and a towering flagpole, Julian arrives at a hotel in Mexico City. A doorman opens the taxi door, and Julian tips him. Buttoning his jacket, he walks into the foyer. The slim man in the white suit with long black hair and strong Mexican features watches from across the pink-painted hotel forecourt. He waits until Julian is inside before following him in with the case. In the hotel, Julian strolls into the blue-painted bar in the cocktail lounge. He sets his black leather bag down by the bar and takes off his dark glasses.
Buenas tardes. Deme una margarita, por favor. mucho, Sam.
The barman nods and goes to pour the ingredients into a cocktail shaker. He shakes it like a pair of maracas. Julian watches mesmerized, his tongue peeping through his lips. The barman with the cocktail shaker in one hand places a glass edged with salt in front of Julian with the other. The long-haired man comes up to the bar, puts his aluminium case down next to Julian's bag, and orders a beer.
Cerveza, por favor. Sin vaso.
Julian speaks to the barman, and subtitles appear. I was wondering, I'm looking for a particularly bloody bullfight. Any chance one's happening this Sunday? A matador from Madrid fights on Sunday. As they go on talking, the long-haired, white-suited man downs his bottled beer in one long swallow, glancing at Julian from the corner of his eye. The long-haired man goes. Are you in town for business or pleasure? Asks the barman.
My business is my pleasure.
Julian picks up the aluminium case which the white-suited Mexican left behind and goes to his largely yellow room. He throws his black bag on the floor, puts the case on the bed, opens it and takes out an envelope containing black and white photos of a dark-haired woman. He tosses them on the bed. He lifts up the flap to the bottom half of the case and brings out a gun. Down in the foyer.
How you doing?
I'm a nervous wreck.
Yeah, think positive.
I think that I'm sweating through my suit.
Danny and Phil leave the hotel in a taxi just as Julian appears in the foyer wearing pale chinos and a brown striped short-sleeved shirt. He takes off his dark glasses, smears a blob of sun cream on his nose, and walks off across the forecourt. Later, he raises a pistol, takes careful aim, and fires. A fairground trinket falls. Julian gives a suave, lopsided smile to three Mexican schoolgirls sitting at a fountain nearby. He smirks and takes aim at the next target. He misses and turns to the girls with "I meant to do that" laugh.
Hello, Julian.
A silver-haired man walks up.
Getting some culture?
Indeed.
Isn't she a tad pubescent, even for you?
I'd make an exception for her.
Did you study the assignment?
No, I shredded it. Then I humped the bellboy on the room service cart.
Am I supposed to be shocked?
Adios.
The girls go.
Buen dia. I hate these Catholic countries. Oh, blushy, blushy, no sucky fucky.
Well, somehow, I think you'll find your way.
The men stroll by a fountain.
Now look, there's been a change of plans. Portfolio has to be delivered sooner than we discussed.
What are you saying?
She's leaving for Europe tomorrow.
I'm not a fucking magician, you know.
Just get it done today.
The man gives Julian a humorous smile and walks off. He turns back and calls across the pool of the fountain.
I almost forgot.
Yeah?
Happy birthday!
He waves his hand in salute before walking on. Julian returns the gesture in surprise, turns away and puts a hand to his head.
Happy birthday.
Later, the slim, dark-haired woman from the photographs comes out of a courtyard door and starts walking down a narrow street. From across the street, one story up, the crosshairs of a gun sight pick her out and focus in on her forehead.
We shouldn't even need to think about it.
That's good, right?
Yes, I think so. Oh. Dos margaritas, por favor.
Phil, I think we did it.
Yeah, I don't know what you were freaking out about, man. You were remarkable back there.
You were.
No, you. It was you. There's no way they can't give us this job.
You really think that?
I know.
They clink glasses and punch the air. Danny orders two more drinks. As night falls in Mexico City, a 40s movie plays on the TV in Julian's room.
Once a boy I know went to Mexico. He knew just four words to tell his love. And that's that. And that's that. And that's that. And that's that. Though his words were few, still...
Julian is sitting on the end of his bed, bare-chested and smoking, with a huge straw sombrero on his head. He stares at the screen with an expression of fascination that turns to despair. He closes his eyes and bows his head. He presses the remote and throws it across the vast room. His head still bowed, he drops the big straw hat onto the floor. Later, he gets on the phone.
Hello?
Andy!
Yeah?
Andy, you crazy limey bastard, it's me!
Who?
Julian!
Who?
Yeah, Julian Noble from Portugal, remember?
Who?
Julian Noble? Yeah, I just thought I'd give you a chat, you know, see how you're doing. It's my birthday. Andy? Hello?
He lowers the receiver and looks back at the TV. A man plays Spanish guitar, surrounded by the slim legs of pirouetting dancing girls. Julian tries another number.
Yeah, hello, is Cindy there?
His phone book has numbers for brothels in Athens, lockpickers in Puerto Rico, wigs, beards and false noses in the Dominican Republic. He tosses it across the room. Later he walks into a sex club. A stripper is dancing. Another woman is chained to a pole. A third rhythmically moves her hand between her legs. Two male performers copulate. A chihuahua from a 40s TV musical makes an appropriate comment.
Now this smells like a party!
Julian grins, and the picture fades to black. Later, Danny sits alone at the hotel bar, in shirt and tie, drinking margaritas. Julian comes up in his striped short-sleeved shirt.
Margarita, por favor.
Si, señor.
Danny looks up at him with a happy, woozy smile.
Well, you look like you could use one.
Julian gives him a hostile stare, but Danny keeps on smiling. Julian shrugs.
Who couldn't? I've had, four, five, maybe, I don't know. They're darn tasty.
Margaritas always taste better in Mexico.
They certainly do.
Margaritas and cock.
The jovial smile freezes on Danny's face.
Gracias. One for my friend over there.
No, but... That's...
Don't worry, I'm not trying to make a pass at you.
I'm not worried, but thank you.
You're that type of guy.
No, I mean, thank you. I don't mean to be rude, but...
It's all right. I'm just messing with you.
Julian morosely raises his glass. Danny nods, but looks around uneasily.
I'm sorry about the cock comment. Kind of conversation stopper.
Kinda.
Danny grins. Julian stares into his drink.
So? What are you doing in Mexico?
Julian, cigarette in hand, looks around the room and moves along the bar closer to Danny.
Tell me something.
Danny Wright. Garrison Wright.
He hands Julian his card.
Tell me something. Danny Wright.
Yes, sir.
Julian pockets it.
Why the hell do you care why I'm in Mexico? Why so interested?
No reason, just hotel bar conversation, I guess.
You at the farm?
What's that?
The agency.
What?
You following me?
No.
I make you?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I fucking make you?
Okay, I'm going to excuse myself. I have to go.
No, please.
I'm tired. I'm very tired.
No, please. I didn't mean to word you like you.
It's okay.
I just get paranoid sometimes. I was wrong, please. I'm drunk. I'm tired. I've been fornicating for the last 2 hours. And before that, I was doing shit. Horrible business shit. Please, come on. I was out of order. Let's finish that drink. Come on.
Danny glances nervously at his watch.
Here you go. Here's your drink. Danny, here you go. I mean, you seem like a nice guy. normal guy. I'm sorry.
They sit back at the bar.
Really, it's all right.
So, you in town on business? You have that way about you, Danny.
Danny gives him a long look, takes off his specs, and has a stab at Julian's accent.
Why so interested?
Who?
Yeah?
Oh, I'm here on business.
Has it gone well?
Very well, I hope. My partner and I, he's upstairs. We just had a very good pitch session.
No shame.
Very good.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. That's great, Danny.
I needed a day like this.
Yeah.
I had a tough couple of years. I was with this business out of Denver for 9 years. And out of the blue, they laid me off. Yeah, just like that. And it was, I don't know, 2.5 years ago. I've been struggling back ever since.
And the day you got back?
Well, I hope.
Today, you're a man again.
Yeah.
And to be a man after they fuck you and destroy your self-respect.
Julian wags a finger.
Well, that is a great thing.
Thank you.
Julian hails the barman.
Bus smuggler is por favor.
The two men sit side by side, elbows on the bar.
You're married, Danny?
Oh, yeah. 14 years.
Let me guess. High school sweetheart.
It's true.
Unbelievable. That fucking American dream, huh?
He slaps Danny's thigh.
What about you? What do you do for a living?
Julian lights a cigarette.
And kids? You got kids, Danny?
Danny fiddles with his specs.
Oh, no. I crossed the line.
No. You did not.
No, I did.
You did not cross the line. No.
Sorry.
It's fine. It's fine.
Danny looks away, scratching at his cheek.
We lost our son 3 years ago.
He turns to face Julian, swallows hard and glances up, meeting his eye.
A school bus accident. 14 children lived that day. And one died. How was Henry?
He looks straight ahead, across the bar.
Oh, yeah. Bad run there for a while.
Two Mexicans walk into a cantina.
What?
Two Mexicans walk into a cantina. One of them's a midget, the other's got a dick 15 inches long.
What are you saying?
I'm just trying to change the subject. So the midget says to the bartender, "They call my amigo the human swizzle stick. You know what they call me?"
This is incredible.
What?
Danny picks up his jacket and stands up.
You're very rude.
Danny, I'm just trying to change the subject.
Thank you very much for the drink. Goodbye, good night. Thank you.
Julian turns to watch him go.
Don't you want to hear the punchline?
He turns back to the empty bar.
A fucking good one.
The barman places two fresh margaritas on the bar. Julian lines them both up in front of him, and the picture fades to black. Julian, in sunglasses, draws on a cigarette as he strides across the wide foyer of the ultra-modern hotel. People stare at him in amazement or distaste. He's wearing only his gold chain, tight black swimming trunks, and ankle-length cowboy boots. His slim body is pallid and hairy. In one hand, he carries a beer can, from which he occasionally swigs. He walks swiftly out to the pool area, where people are stretched out on sun loungers. He flicks away his cigarette end, kicks off his boots, and steps out into the pool, still clutching the beer can. He stands on the bottom, staring about him, bubbles rising up from the drinks can and the corners of his mouth. A shark cruises round in the water. Julian sees it with a start, and his mouth gapes 3 times. Danny and Phil are in the hotel foyer.
Are you sure you don't want to switch?
No, get out of here. Come on, you're the one with the kids. You're the one with a tree in your kitchen. What, do you want to flip another coin? No. Come on, somebody's got to stay for now. I'm going to call you the minute I hear something.
Call me sooner.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
What?
Cell phone. I think I left it at the front desk.
Oh.
Watch my stuff
for
a sec.
Yeah. Right,
Phil hurries away.
So you're staying an extra few days.
What?
Couldn't help it over here.
Yeah, so you're spying on my personal conversations now, huh? Great.
Something about the asshole buyers not being completely convinced. Now wanted to hear other pitches. Sorry about that.
Danny shrugs.
I knew things were too good to be true anyway.
Look, I'm sorry about the circumstances, but I'm glad you're still in town because it gives me the opportunity to tell you how truly embarrassed I am about last night. See, the thing is, I liked you. I kind of enjoyed talking to someone, you know, just talking.
Really?
Yeah.
Danny steps closer.
And yet, I tell you about my dead son and you mock it.
Julian shifts awkwardly.
I lost my wife. I was 24 years old. I was drunk. I plowed our car into an oak tree.
Jesus.
And since then, I've soiled my way through life, been a magnificently cold moron. I run away from anything that remotely resembles an emotion. Thus, you tell me about your dead son, I tell you a joke about a 15-inch schlong.
Danny smiles, despite himself.
So you can forgive me, huh?
Got it! Better I remember it now than somewhere over Amarillo, right?
Right.
All right. Speak to you manana, right?
Yeah.
It's gonna be all right.
I know.
Okay?
Phil gets into a taxi. Danny glances round, but Julian has disappeared. As Danny crosses the foyer, Julian runs up behind him.
Danny! Hey, Danny, wait. Hey, I've got an extra ticket to the bullfights this afternoon. Supposed to be a good one. Would mean a great deal to me if you would join me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. That's very nice of you. And I can't. I have work.
On a Sunday afternoon? You ever seen a bullfight?
No.
You haven't seen the real Mexico City until you've seen a bullfight.
Whoa!
Julian holds up his fingers like horns.
Come on.
Nestled among modern skyscrapers and sprawling highways, the saucer-shaped bullring looks like a relic from the ancient world. The crowd roar their approval as a bull charges the matador's pink and yellow cape, its horns passing inches from his body. Julian and Danny watch from high on the tiered seats as the matador tempts the bull into a series of increasingly tighter, closer passes, until he brings it to a standstill. With elegant nonchalance, he turns his back on the bull and walks away, lifting his hat to the crowd. Danny takes in his surroundings with a bewildered smile.
Bean is not going to believe this. I can't wait to tell her.
Where did you ever find a woman like that? I mean, a woman you can share everything with.
She's pretty special.
You must be, too. I could learn from you.
Learn what? You want my mortgage? My blood pressure?
I never had my blood pressure taken. I wouldn't know how to get a mortgage for all the teenage twat in Thailand.
You don't own a house?
No house. No apartment. No address.
Julian brings out a cigar.
Bullshitting me?
Oh, shit, you know. Monte Cristo?
Yeah. Thanks. So really, you don't have, like, a permanent address? Where do you live?
I live wherever I'm working.
Well, so what do you do, Julian? What do you possibly do? You don't have a permanent home or an address.
The matador faces the bull with his thin sword pointed, ready for the kill.
I'd rather not say.
The matador lunges with the sword.
Oh, my God. Did you see that?
Jeez, it's so bloody.
Yeah, they're lucky. That matador was very good. It's much worse when they're mediocre.
Why?
Great matador. He can kill the bull with one plunge of the blade. A lesser one, he's going to have to plunge that blade more than once. That makes the crowd very unhappy. They don't like to see the bull suffer.
No. Oh, no. They clearly care so very much about these animals.
They respect these beasts. They want them to die with honor.
It's ridiculous. There's no honor in being killed by a man with a sword, whether it's one plunge or 20.
You're wrong. You're very wrong. There is honor.
How would you know?
Julian shrugs, puffing at his cigar.
I do.
Danny peers at him with a bemused smile.
You're a mysterious man, Julian.
Mm-hmm.
The new bull leaps into the ring.
And yet you won't tell me what you do.
It's confidential.
Confidential? Your work's confidential? What, do you work for the government?
For the government? Please. You know what they pay? Forget it. Watch the picadors.
You spy? Something like that?
You read too many novels, Danny.
Huh? You spy? Huh?
Julian throws him a look. Danny nods knowingly.
All right, so now you're not going to tell me. It's okay. It's okay.
Feigning indifference, Danny takes a sip from his drink. Julian glances at him soberly.
All right.
I tell you, will you keep your cool?
What do you mean?
I mean, we're in a public place and I don't want you to lose your shit.
Lose my shit? My God, what are you going to tell me?
Sometimes.
He takes a long, slightly melodramatic puff at his cigar. Danny leans in.
Sometimes what?
Sometimes people need to be eliminated.
Danny nods and breaks into a grin.
Oh, come on!
Julian looks at him in all seriousness.
What? You're a hitman?
Oh, please. Please. My handler calls me a facilitator. Facilitator of fatalities.
That's insane.
Yeah, think what you like.
I gotta hand it to you, Julian. You're one of the best bullshit artists I've ever met, and I've met some.
You're absolutely right, Danny. My name's Earl Johnson. I sell aluminum siding in Minneapolis.
Danny goes on nodding, still unsure.
Do you say you actually kill people for aluminum?
I do what I'm asked to do. What makes sense to me.
For, like, the mob?
I tend to be hired on the more kind of anonymous, high-paying jobs. Corporate gigs.
Corporate gigs?
I'm a great helper in getting deals closed.
Danny stares at him uncertainly, then his face breaks into a slow smile.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
I don't believe in the Easter Bunny.
I don't believe you for a second. Come on. Corporate gigs.
Think what you will.
It's ridiculous.
Hey, yes.
Corporate gigs.
Yes, my God. I knew there was a reason I never told anyone what I did.
Uh-huh. All right, see that guy over there?
Fat man and little girl?
Yeah. Say I want him dead. I want him dead, his family dead. Right now. Right here.
Right now? Couldn't happen.
Well, I know, but say that it could. Money's no object.
Okay. You sure you want to know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you sure?
Yeah. I want you to facilitate it.
Okay, Danny. All right, come with me.
All right, let's go.
They step out of the arena into the circular promenade that runs along the outside of the bullring, where the gents are and where food sellers have their kiosks. The area is crowded with pallets piled with boxes. Spectators mingle with security guards and policemen.
I'm a big fan of the gotta pee theory of assassinations.
Gotta pee?
Everyone's gotta pee.
Ah.
Now, ask me for a cigarette.
What?
Do it.
Can I have a cigarette, please?
Sure. But these things will kill you, you know.
He lights their cigarettes.
Now, look around.
Behind Danny, three policemen are standing by the main exit.
You're scary.
Yes and no.
Why?
Well, they seem more interested in the beautiful women coming and going from the ladies' room. That's good for us. Just like those men over there at the concession stand. They're only interested in us if they see us walking over with our wallets open. No one is watching the men's room.
The gotta pee theory.
You're catching on. Now, escape routes.
Escape routes?
Yeah, don't want to get caught, right?
No.
Don't get caught. It sucks.
Right.
See the main exit?
Yeah.
That's a traffic jam.
Where else?
You tell me.
Okay. That door up there. If it weren't locked.
A Vietnamese girl I once knew had her legs so locked together I couldn't get a whiff of her spring roll. Two drinks, half a quaalude later, I was at an all-you-can-eat buffet. Every lock can be broken. It's just a matter of will, whether it's worth it.
The padlock door opens a fraction.
This looks like it's worth it. Unos cigarrillos, por favor.
Why are we buying the cigarettes?
Because I want to smoke. Come here.
Gracias.
Come over here.
Julian walks towards a rubbish bin.
Now do your shoelaces up.
Julian throws the cigarette wrapper into the rubbish bin. Danny ties his shoelace, and two policemen walk by.
What time's our flight to Florida, Seymour?
Danny grins.
I think 2:00, Derek.
Julian pours the butane from his cigarette lighter into the bin.
Let's go, Seymour.
Inside the arena, a matador executes a series of skillful passes over the bull's head with his red cape. The fat, white-bearded man with a walking stick and Panama hat, whom Danny has picked as their target, slurps his drink while the young woman at his side watches with parted lips. Outside, Julian picks the padlock of the chain door and opens it. Danny watches impressed. His face breaks into a schoolboy smile, and he thumps Julian on the chest. Inside the arena, the skillful matador accepts the plaudits of the crowd. The bearded fat man plants a kiss on the young woman's cheek and stands up. She grimaces as he moves past her, steadying himself with his cane. As he starts to walk up the steps to the exit, the main matador, carrying his folded cape under his arm, makes his way down the bullring tunnel towards the sunlit arena and the waiting bull. In the promenade, Julian watches the fat man approach the men's lavatories. Julian turns to Danny and leads him past the kiosk to the rubbish bin.
You ready?
Ready for what?
You wanted to see what I do, right?
Yes. Yes, I've been watching. But, you know.
But what? Show and tell is over. The real deal is about to start.
The real deal?
Mm-hmm.
Julian throws his cigarette into the bin.
Show and tell is for sissies.
Huh?
But a sissy I'm not.
Policemen run to the fire.
That's for the distraction.
Easy.
Fire at tits. Either one will distract most cops. You ready to finish what we started?
Julian, that was extremely dangerous, okay? Yeah, I think you proved your point.
Baloney, baloney, baloney. Come on. The cops may have gone towards the fire, but his bodyguard probably stood firm.
Bodyguard?
If they must have killed a person, they always have a bodyguard. If they didn't, they'd have asked you. So, slit the guard's throat in one motion, push him into the bathroom.
Julian pulls a knife and drags Danny into the men's.
And now we're set up for the kill.
In the ring, the young matador, wearing white and gold, raises his sword.
Where the hell did you get the knife?
He's clearly not paying, so it must be number dos.
Okay, joke's over. What point made, Julian? Let's go.
Not yet.
Okay, point
not,
made.
Not yet.
No, 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 no. The point's made. Come on, let's get out of here. This is
horrible. Don't fucking ruin things, okay? Don't.
He points his knife at Danny's throat. The young matador rises on tiptoe. Julian walks towards the lavatory stalls.
Okay, Julian.
Espira, stop this! No way, Joseph, done.
Yeah, but this is not a job!
You said money was no object.
Okay.
Julian spots the man's walking stick.
Bingo was his name. Oh, this is what you wanted, right?
No!
This is what you helped me with.
I didn't help you.
Oh, yes, you did. Oh, yes,
God. No, no, no.
The matador points his sword at the bull.
Oh, God, no!
Julian kicks open the lavatory door.
Oh, disculpa, me porto lo siento.
With an apologetic smile, Julian closes the cubicle door and turns back to Danny.
Fun, eh? Come on.
That was incredible! You scared the hell out of me!
You liked that, didn't you?
Oh! Hey,
you did?
I really thought it.
What, I stabbed a stranger?
I don't know.
Just like that? A complete stranger?
Well, yes! Yes, I did.
Look, I'm not psychotic, Danny.
No, I know, I know.
You're psychopathic, maybe, but not psychotic.
No, I don't think you're psychopathic.
I kill people. Doesn't that seem a wee bit psychopathic to you?
Well, yeah, but, you know...
Oh, well, don't get the wrong impression. Huh? Just because we share a laugh doesn't mean I'm not unsavory.
No, no, no. What you do is unsavory.
Well, you know what they say. You are what you do.
At an outdoor cafe, a pretty young blonde seated with an older male companion smiles across at Julian, who's openly eyeing her up. She dabs suggestively at the corner of her mouth with her napkin. Julian gestures at her companion. The blonde shrugs. Danny watches with an admiring smile.
As is. As is.
A waiter brings drinks to their table and goes.
Tell me.
Julian looks soberly at Danny.
Will Bean stay with you if this job doesn't come through?
What?
Will Bean stay with you if you continue this losing streak without any end?
She ever left me, I'd fall apart and never get...
You're not answering my question.
Danny meets Julian's insistent gaze.
To be quite honest, I don't know how much faith the woman has left in her.
Julian reaches across the table, puts his hand over Danny's hand, and pats it.
Comforting me?
Julian looks embarrassed and points a kidding finger.
Let's change the subject, please.
I agree.
Something sunnier.
Sunnier? Absolutely. In fact, there's something I wanted to talk to you about. It's a favor, really.
Sure.
It's pretty big, if that's okay. It's a pretty big favor.
No, it's okay.
See, thing is, I could use your help.
Help in what?
I'm down here. I finished my other job early, so I let it be known.
You let it be known?
Yeah, to the powers that be, that I was available.
The powers that be?
Yeah. Anyway, they called me up. An urgent thing. Has to happen today.
Another job?
Mm-hmm.
Christ.
And the thing is, I could really use your help.
Danny stares at him, wide-eyed.
Oh. You're kidding right now.
I'm as serious as an erection problem.
I mean,
Gracias.
I can't help you, Julian.
You could.
Well, I could, but I can't. I'm not going to help you kill an innocent man.
Who says he's innocent?
No, this is ridiculous.
You just be assisting.
No.
You just have to go out.
No, I'm not listening. I can't hear you.
He puts his hands over his ears.
You're being childish.
Ooga shaka.
You're being childish. You're being childish. All I'm asking you to do is just go.
All right.
I won't tell you.
Good.
Won't mention it.
Great.
Won't say that. All you have to do is trip on the street right next to him.
I can't believe you just said that.
Just trip and fall in about half an hour so his bodyguards turn and look the other way.
No way.
Julian moves his chair closer.
$50,000. That's what I could pay.
No.
That's a lot of money. Cash. And it could be real interesting.
No, I said no.
He's a prick, Danny. A real prick.
I don't give a darn who he is or what he did or anything like that. I'm not going to help you, Julian. I'm not going to do that. And if you bring it up again, I'll leave.
Julian moves his chair back. He tugs at his suede jacket, crosses his legs sulkily, and looks over at the blonde.
Fine. Change the subject.
Good. You do.
Change it.
You?
Fine.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be a cheerleader.
Danny hears the comment and pulls a face.
Really? A cheerleader?
Yeah. I wanted to be thrown in the air and march in the band.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Danny smiles sympathetically.
It's so funny. I've got a brother-in-law who's a male cheerleader.
Jesus Christ, Danny, I'm fucking kidding. I didn't want to be a cheerleader. I don't want to talk about cheerleaders unless I'm talking about getting in a soapy shower with them. I want to talk about what I wanted to talk about, which you don't want to talk about.
But there's nothing to talk about.
He shrugs awkwardly, but is immovable.
Well, then, it was nice knowing you.
Oh, come now, Julian. Come on, what are you just leaving? You're going
to
leave?
I've got business to attend to.
No, I really thought...
Nothing. Think nothing. Just consider me the best cocktail party story you ever met.
Bye, Danny.
Julian walks away with a final look back at the blonde.
Julian!
Danny turns round, but Julian carries on walking. That evening, Danny sits barefoot on a carpeted step in his hotel room with his papers and laptop.
So unfortunately, I was right. I finally got in touch with Alejandra, and she said that our bosses are now leaning towards Cardenas and his group, and not us. Now, things still might break in our favor. I mean, their first instinct was to go with us, but they're getting pretty intense pressure to sign with a Mexican company. I'm trying to get Antonio so I can set up one more meeting with you guys tomorrow. I'll call you when I hear something. So, hang in there. It's not over yet.
Es el fin de sus mensajes.
Danny glumly chews his bottom lip. Much later that night, the sheet has been pulled back on the bed, the pillows lain on, but the bed is empty. Danny, sitting on the unlit balcony, with an empty bottle resting at his elbow, stares out into the night with a forlorn and distracted expression.
Danny, it's Julian. Come on, Danny, I just want to say I'm sorry. I know it's late and I'm a little fucked up, but I'm sorry. I'm a mess. I'm a fucker.
In one hand, Julian holds a beer bottle. With the other, he pinches the bridge of his nose.
Look, I shouldn't have asked you to help me. I infringed on your kindness, but please. Let me tell you I'm sorry. Let me apologize. Can't you see how guilty I feel?
On a black screen, a caption reads, 6 months later. In a palatial apartment, a woman kneels on a bed in stockings as Julian, in just his shirt and shoes, takes her from behind. Another caption in big puce letters reads, Vienna.
It's not unused, you want to be loved by me.
A small terrier dog races through the elegant draped rooms and grabs Julian's ankle. Without breaking his rhythm, Julian tries to shake the dog off. The woman rides on. Julian tosses a magazine. He sits alone in a brightly lit bar drinking whiskey. Behind him, punters cheer a football game on TV in Las Vegas. He assembles a high-powered rifle and takes aim at a man walking across a square in Moscow. Julian chats up a waitress in Sydney who listens to him with cautious interest. He pulls out a wad of notes and offers her a $100 bill. She gives him the finger.
It's not unusual, it happens every day.
A final caption reads Budapest. It's evening and already dark as Julian in a black leather coat strolls across the damp flagstones of a small square towards a large illuminated window. Beyond the glass, a group of ballerinas in white tights and black leotards dance gracefully to a string quartet under the watchful eye of a ballet mistress. Reflected in the glass, Julian watches with a wistful expression, biting his lip. He closes his eyes and lowers his head. As he looks up, another reflection appears beside him, the grey head and gnarled face of his handler. Neither man looks at the other.
Hello, Julian.
Julian nods.
Getting some culture?
Anytime I can.
You look tired.
I am. I need a break.
What are you saying, Julian?
Moscow, Las Vegas, Vienna, the Philippines, and now Budapest.
I'm exhausted. You know what it's like. You take a break, we go with the younger, cheaper kid. He does all right. And then maybe we don't want you back when you're ready to get back in the game.
He'll always want me.
No, not always. Not if we can save a few dollars. Not if it gets sloppy again, like in Manila.
That was one time.
Made some people nervous. It made me nervous.
Well, that's why I need a break. I don't want to have something like that happen again.
It can't.
I know, that's what I'm saying, but I'm feeling burnt out. I'm feeling shaky.
He pulls out a cigarette.
Can you believe this shit? I mean, can you believe the words coming out of my mouth?
He tries to light it.
Did you ever think you'd live to see the day?
I never thought you'd live to see the day.
There's not a retirement home for assassins, is there? Archery at 4, riflery at 5, little early bird dinner at 6.
God damn it, Julian. You leave the game, even for a while. I don't know if they're going to let you back in. And then what the hell are you going to do? Waste your days picking up illiterate teenagers for suck and fuck sessions behind the old Navy store?
Sounds delightful to me.
Julian, do this job. Do it because if you don't, you're going to regret it, and I can promise you that.
How do you know?
The handler seems about to say something, then changes his mind.
Just do it, Julian. Please, do it. Okay?
He walks away. Julian looks on the verge of tears. In the morning sunshine, Julian climbs an inspection ladder up the side of a building with an elaborate rooftop balustrade overlooking a long, narrow square. He walks to the far end of the roof, puts down his holdall, and unzips it. Ducking down behind the ornate balustrade, he starts to assemble his sniper's rifle. Down in the square, two cello players are busking, a couple buy balloons from a street seller, two elderly men play chess at a table. The tourists are dressed up against the cold, and there is snow on the narrow ledge of the parapet, where Julian carefully places his signet rings and dark glasses. Squatting with his back against the stone crenellations, his brow furrowed in a deep-set frown, Julian brings out a slim flask from his trouser pocket and takes a swig. He grimaces as he swallows and stares at the flask in his hands. He heaves a big, nervous sigh. He picks up the rifle and fits an ammunition clip to it. He sticks the rifle barrel through a gap in the parapet and looks through the telescopic sight at the people milling around an equestrian statue on the square below. His vision blurs. He jerks his head up with a start. He lowers his head to look into the sights again. He shuts one eye and looks through the other. He trains the crosshairs on a man, but again his vision blurs. He wipes a hand across his face and sights the gun on a blurred figure below. It comes into focus. It's Julian himself, alone in the empty bullring, clutching his head. Tourists look up at the sound, and pigeons flutter away. A slim man in a mac walks hurriedly down the aisle of a Budapest church and comes up behind Julian's handler, who's standing in front of a row of lit offertory candles, reading a guidebook.
We have a problem, Mr. Randy. Problem is Julian Noble. Seems he didn't deliver the portfolio.
You know, it says it took 53 years to paint this ceiling.
People are upset, Mr. Randy. Mr. Stick is upset.
Mr. Sticknose.
Mr. Sticknose.
Mr. Randy raises his eyebrows.
Well, he knows we can fix it.
He takes a few steps. The other man follows.
I'm just the messenger.
But he knows we can fix it. We always fix any problems.
Can't fix it with Noble.
Two women pass.
Ladies. All right. I'll replace him.
No. Yes. You'll replace him, but no. Mr. Stick has asked for other things.
No, it's ridiculous. Julian has been with us for 22 years. Two little mistakes.
Julian Noble is a dead man.
The rain-coated messenger turns on his heel and walks away. The screen fades to black. Danny and Bean are making love in their laundry room.
Oh, yeah.
That's it, Danny boy.
Oh, yeah.
That's me, Danny boy.
Bean sitting on the tumble dryer, legs wide apart. Danny's glasses are steamed up.
Danny boy. Oh.
Danny's face goes through a series of hideous contortions, as if he's in great pain. Bean throws her head back with a smile.
Excellent.
Water's done.
A green caption reads, Denver. It's a snowy night, and Danny and Bean's house is decorated with Christmas lights. In the bedroom, Danny pulls in his stomach, thrusts out his chest, and eyes himself in the mirror approvingly. He's grown a moustache.
Tomorrow's 4 years.
I know.
Bean is sitting on their bed in a dressing gown.
Such a long time, really, when you think about it.
Danny pulls on a t-shirt.
Seems like yesterday, right?
He takes off his watch and puts it on the bedside table.
Henry was alive. Here.
She nods, gazing straight ahead. He sits down on the bed behind her.
When I was first in high school, I told you they made fun of me. And they called me Hippo Hips and Plate of Beans, the works. And even though I did basketball and chorus and I had a few friends, I acted strong. I never was. Because I believed them always, every last cruel word. And I always thought I would believe them. Until I met you.
He shifts along the bed towards her.
You arrived in 12th grade.
He puts his arms around her.
And you told me that I was pretty. And for the first time, I believed that. You told me that I was sexy.
You were sexy back there in the dryer.
And when Henry died, you told me to stay strong. And that we would get through it. And we did. We did.
She rests her head against his cheek. He pulls away to look at her. She wipes a tear from her eye. And they kiss.
It's because you never gave up on me.
I never could. I never will.
She cups his face in her hands. And their kissing becomes more passionate.
Who could that be at 11:30 at night?
They come downstairs in their dressing gowns.
Yeah. That ain't right. Yes. Who's there?
Danny, Danny. Danny with the large white fanny.
Julian!
Would you mind opening up, Danny? It's freezing out here. My balls are like bonbons.
I was praying you'd remember me. It's been a spell.
please, come on. Come on in.
Thank you.
Danny checks outside for anyone looking. He and Julian hug. Julian notices the moustache.
Hey. Oh, I decided to...
How did you find me?
Please, I found a hole with a heart of gold once. I can certainly find Danny Wright's card in my address book.
He sees Bean.
Oh, excuse me, I didn't realize. Sorry.
It's okay.
Hey, you must be Bean.
She nods.
My wife.
Before he can go to her, Danny makes him take off his boots.
Right, the boots.
learned so much about you.
And me, you?
Bean offers him her hand. He takes it and kisses it.
There's no doubt you're every bit as lovely as Danny said.
Danny hurries to her side.
I always said you were the luckiest man I ever met.
Bean looks at her husband, pleased. Danny gives a dismissive shrug.
What are you doing here, Julian?
Julian looks at them abashed, his expression unusually humble. Several times he seems on the point of speaking. Finally, he pulls a helpless face.
I really don't know. I don't know.
Danny nods gravely.
I hope it's all right, my being here. I guess it's the middle of the night.
Yes.
Well?
I could sure use some coffee. Just a cup.
Yes. Right, of course. I can get some coffee.
Oh, that'd be great.
Or maybe some whiskey?
That's even better.
Tonight's a night for whiskey, then.
And song and dance. Well, whiskey at least.
Danny and Bean peer around the doorway of the kitchen.
This is really odd. Really, really odd.
I could ask him to leave.
We just asked him to stay.
We could change our minds.
Why? Do you think he's dangerous?
Julian waves at them.
He's an assassin, Bean. Of course he's dangerous.
But I mean dangerous, dangerous. You said he was a nice guy.
He is. For an assassin, he's very nice.
Fuck. Fuckity fuck. What? I'm allowed to curse. Especially now. If not now, when?
She watches Julian nosing around their Christmas tree.
It's the fucking perfect time to be fucking cursing. There's a fucking killer standing in our fucking living room.
Julian picks up a photo and looks at it. Bean turns to Danny.
Do you think he would show me his gun?
Danny sips his whiskey.
A toast, maybe?
To a stranger, arriving in the middle of the night.
Well, you're not a stranger.
No, I'm pretty strange. Be that as it may, you're not a stranger, Julian. Far from it. The toast really should be to you, Danny. And to you, Bean. For your hospitality and your warmth.
Standing in front of the Christmas tree, all three sip their drinks and smile.
I never thought I'd see you again, Julian.
I never thought I'd see you again, Danny, but... things change. They just change. Is that...
On the wall is the ticket to the bullfight, framed.
You saved it.
I did.
You saved it. I can't believe it.
He still talks about that all the time.
Oh, that touches me that you kept it.
How could I not?
That was a special day.
Yes.
So Danny told you what I did? Professionally?
Did you bring your gun?
Danny's eyes widen.
Yes. As a matter of fact.
May I see it?
Really?
Yes, please.
Honey, he's not just gonna...
There you go.
Okay.
Julian hands his glass to Danny, pulls up his trouser leg, and takes a small black revolver from an ankle holster and holds it out for Bean to see.
That a 38?
Yes, it is. You know your guns, Bean.
Yes, well...
My God. You are a magnificent woman.
Bean knows a lot of things about a lot of things.
Bean, tell me. Did Danny tell you everything about our time in Mexico together?
Yes, I'm sure. Why?
Ah.
He sips his drink and pats Danny's cheek.
My God, you look great, Danny. Really great.
You do too, Julie.
Yeah, I know. I look like a Bangkok hooker on a Sunday morning after the Navy left town. But you... Life's been good to you, am I right?
Pretty good, yeah.
Your work? You had that respect you wanted back again?
I do.
Yeah. So you got that job you were in Mexico for?
We did.
And your luck. It's better, right? No more trees in the kitchen?
I told them about that.
And you love Bean more than ever?
That I do.
Then what more could you want? Here's a toast. To a man with respect again. To a woman who's more lovely than any man deserves. And to me.
What is the toast to you for?
Toast to a dead man, Bean.
He looks her in the eye.
Toast to a dead man.
Later in the kitchen, Bean slices a pecan pie.
And about 2 months ago, I had this job in Manila. Now, normally, this would make me happy. I like the hot climate. Guys look like chicks. It's fucking fantastic. The thing was, I was burnt out. I didn't know it. I didn't even know what burnt out meant at the time. But I was. I was a classic textbook case.
Julian, in a patterned short-sleeved shirt, waits to cross a busy road in Manila. Cars and bicycle rickshaws scoot by.
I was having panic attacks. I was completely losing control of myself. I tried to counter this with booze, of course, but nothing was working. I drank and drank and... nothing. I was still feeling itchy, still feeling like my head was going to explode. So, I moved on to my other usual diversions. Wonderful little whorehouse I knew right off of Mabini Street.
Julian follows a Filipina girl up some stairs.
That wasn't working either. And a good fuck usually does. Excuse my French.
Go on.
So I have this assignment. Nothing special. Some copper wire executive. Someone doesn't want him around. You know, my usual type gig. Well, I knew that this copper wire guy always came to this sweaty little outdoor market every Thursday to buy fruit. The guy liked his fruit.
Julian presses through a crowded market, past caged monkeys and stalls selling poultry.
It's a simple plan. As he walks through the crowds, I bump into him and stab him.
Julian, lurching slightly, watches a thin, balding Filipino man in a white suit testing fruit for ripeness at a stall.
The thing was, I was still a mess.
Two men carrying a mirror pass in front of Julian.
And every time I looked at the guy, I didn't see him, but I saw a little boy instead.
The mirror passes and the white-suited Filipino has become a small, dark-haired boy. Julian runs a despairing hand through his hair. The boy gazes solemnly in his direction.
And it wasn't just any boy. It was me. Me as a child.
Danny listens with rapt attention and shakes his head.
That's freaky shit, right?
The boy stares at Julian.
Real nervous breakdown sort of stuff.
The boy walks slowly towards Julian, who brings out a switchblade.
Still ready the knife. Still prepared for the job.
The boy passes by. Julian watches him go, his feet rooted to the spot.
I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it.
The boy is once again the thin Filipino man in the white suit. Julian, seeing him go, wipes a hand over his eyes. Bean listens engrossed. Danny bites on a pecan.
Then what happened?
I woke up in a pile of donkey shit. I fainted. I guess I landed in a pile of donkey shit.
Julian slowly opens his eyes, his face pressed into the donkey droppings.
And since then, it's been extremely hot and cold. Some jobs go okay, others not so okay. And then a few weeks ago, I fucked up again in Budapest. Froze. Right at the moment I should have been firing. Didn't finish the job. And that was that. Now it's just a matter of time.
He looks down broodily.
Well, isn't there somebody that you can talk to?
Like Mary Beth and Human Resources?
Come on, this is insane. They're gonna kill you for botching a job? Well, can't you just, you know, say to them, you know what, I'm sorry. You know what, I was a little burnt out and I'm a little messed up. I mean, can't you do that? But when you were seeing images of yourself as a small boy, if that's not a Freudian meltdown, I don't know what is. Certainly they have to see that.
No, they don't. I mean, I'd be dead today if my handler hadn't risked his life and tipped me off on the company plans. I barely got out of Budapest alive.
And how did you end up here? In Denver?
Julian smiles bitterly into his whiskey.
That's funny. Some people run home in a time of crisis. My problem I shared with Danny in Mexico, is that I don't have a home. I mean, that's why I'm here.
He tilts his head towards Danny.
You're the only friend I have.
Oh, but that's ridiculous. You have friends.
Julian shakes his head, his eyes lowered.
I don't. Pray don't. You're in. It's fucking crazy, right? You're my only friend and I barely know you.
He pours himself more whiskey.
This home? Your home?
A sentimental look comes into his eyes.
It's the only home I know.
Outside, the snow goes on falling.
Good. She's really fantastic, Danny. She's lovely.
She's everything to me.
Yeah, you said that to me in Mexico. And I nodded and listened. But now I see. I see. You all right?
Danny has lit a fire in the living room. Julian, gazing across to the kitchen at Bean, lowers his head.
Tell her everything that happened in Mexico.
He goes to the window and looks out at the snow.
I told her about our time together, yes.
Danny takes a few steps towards him.
And where does that story end?
Danny glances back towards the kitchen.
She knows the last I heard of you, you were knocking on my hotel room in the middle of the night, asking forgiveness for trying to involve me in a job.
Julian turns to him.
That's what you said. And I knocked and knocked. And you never answered. Yes.
Their eyes meet.
Gentlemen.
They turn, and Julian flashes a smile.
I'm a bit drunk.
That's a nice place to be.
Julian, you will stay the night, of course.
Oh, thank you, Bean. I promise I'll be out of here tomorrow.
Oh, let's not talk about that now.
Well.
You know, I don't think I've been up with guests till 2:30 in the morning in a long time.
It's good, right?
Oh, it's very good.
Hey, can I turn on your stereo?
Sure.
Now?
Yeah, I saw this old record of yours and I just wanted to hear in the wee small hours of the morning, you know? Since we're in the wee small hours of the morning, is that okay?
Certainly, I guess, yeah.
Whiskey glass in hand, Julian starts to dance. Bean closes her eyes and plays with her long blonde hair. Danny's eyes close too as he conducts the music.
I hope you approve, but I would really like to ask your wife to dance.
Bean giggles.
Julian, you have had too much to drink.
Danny mimes. Be my guest.
Yes, I'll have this dance.
In the wee small hours.
Julian bows and offers Bean his hand. She smiles and winks at Danny as she allows herself to be pulled up to her feet. Danny rests his chin on his hands and watches, smiling indulgently. Cheek to cheek, Julian and Bean dance slowly round and round in front of the Christmas tree. A wistful, sentimental expression settles on Danny's face and he lowers his eyes. They come to rest on the whiskey bottle and he reaches for it. Bean twirls beneath Julian's raised arm.
When your lonely heart has learned its lesson.
Bean and Julian smile at each other as they dance. As he watches them, Danny's wistful look broadens into a warm smile. Outside, the snow keeps falling. Bean leans right back in Julian's arms and he leans over her. Danny raises his glass high above his head.
Bravo! Bravo! I learned to dance in a South American jail by a chap named Morales. Well, anyway, that's another story. Another time. A final nightcap.
I can't even think of that headache I'm going to have tomorrow.
Don't. I'll do. And take 3 aspirins and a Roy before you go to bed tonight.
Where'd you hear that one? Assassin's Book of Home Remedies?
Bean sits beside her husband. Julian takes the other sofa.
The only woman I ever loved. My mother.
What about your wife?
My wife?
Danny told me you were married and she died in a car accident. You loved her.
Yeah.
Bean and Danny look sharply at Julian. He opens his mouth and scratches his head. Danny sits up straight, puts on his glasses, and leaps to his feet.
Oh, my God! I can't believe this!
I was never married.
I can't believe this.
There wasn't a car accident.
No. I'd been insensitive to Danny about your son, and I was trying to win him over. It was juvenile stupid.
You know what, Julian? I'm the one that was stupid.
No. You're not stupid. I'm a prick. Me, not you. Well, but the thing is, I could have kept lying to you now, but I chose not to as a sign of respect, because...
Well, now we're friends.
Oh.
Julian turns to Bean.
We are friends, aren't we?
So, what other bullshit did you pour over me, Julian?
Yeah, are you even a hitman, Julian?
Yeah. I fertility, fatality, too. Whatever the fuck you call yourself.
Yes, I am. And so answer your question, Danny. I lie when I need to, tell the truth when I can. With you, it's mostly been the truth.
He drains his glass and puts it on the coffee table in front of Danny and Bean, who are sitting on the sofa next to each other. Julian picks up his leather jacket.
Shall I go?
Bean looks to Danny for the answer. He turns his head away, not looking at either of them.
No.
No.
Julian gives them a grateful smile and slumps down.
Aren't we fucking cosmopolitan? Having a trained assassin stay over the night, letting heartbreaking lies just roll over us like the summer breeze.
Next we should be wife swapping.
They look at him, po-faced.
You don't have a wife. Remember?
That's a good point.
Bean kicks at the coffee table and buries her head in her husband's chest. Fade to black. Danny's in bed wearing a sleep mask. Bean is cuddled up at his back.
Danny. Danny.
Crouching by his side, Julian plucks an earplug from Danny's ear and stares at it.
Danny.
No.
I want chicken. Come on. I gotta talk to you.
Julian is fully dressed. Danny wears sweatpants and a t-shirt.
What's it, Julian? What do you want?
I can't talk about it here.
What?
Danny blinks blearily. They're sitting in Julian's snow-covered car.
Okay, Julian. We're in your rental car.
What is it?
The thing is, Danny. The thing I didn't tell you. The thing that I admitted because Bean was present. Was that I've been offered a way out of my fatal predicament.
Danny has donned a thick hooded parka.
Well, that's good.
I know.
Yeah, no, that's really good. What is it?
My handler, Mr. Randy, contacted me like he always does, with an ad in the International Tribune looking for cat sitters in Bali.
That how you stay in contact? Cat sitter ads?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm so tired, Julian.
He contacted me 4 days ago, and basically he said he'd been to the higher-ups. Got me a reprieve.
Well, like I said, that's great news.
Thing is, he's asked me to do one more job. I have no choice, mind you. It's do the job or else.
Right.
And that brings us to the dirty little problem.
Danny pulls back his hood.
Right. What's the problem?
Well, actually, it's a pretty big problem. And you're really not going to like it.
I'm not going to like it?
Not at all. Because the job involves you.
Danny's eyes widen.
You're not saying what I think you're saying.
What do you think I'm saying?
You know what I think you're saying.
No. I don't think I know what you think I'm saying.
Danny looks frightened.
Somebody want me dead?
Julian looks at him with a steady, unblinking gaze, makes his hand into the shape of a gun, and slowly raises it to Danny's temple.
No, what's that?
No one wants you dead,
huh?
Danny.
Jesus, damn it. Jesus. Thank God.
He hugs Danny, comforting him.
You were doing that?
Well, I need your help in facilitating the fatality.
What?
I need your help.
No. My help is exactly what you don't need.
I'm a mess, Daddy. You know that. I'm a complete mess. I don't really know if I can do this job by myself.
You got to talk to somebody else, a colleague.
I don't know any colleagues.
You must.
I don't.
Well, I can't help you.
Danny, I know you're not the ideal candidate.
Ideal? I'm far, far from ideal, Julian. Do you not remember my reaction the last time you proposed something this asinine?
It was just in Mexico. I was trying to show you a good time.
Oh, so now killing somebody is a good time?
Can be.
Oh, I'm going to sleep.
Danny,
come on. What do you need a second person? Haven't you done all these things yourself?
Some jobs are better with two men.
Well, I think it's better if the second man isn't scared shitless and unprepared. And unqualified and uninterested. Now, I'm going to go to bed, Julian.
Look, I'm in a very dangerous position here, Danny. I'm in no shape to try this myself. An assassin without confidence is a horrible thing to behold.
It's like a relief pitcher who fumbles the ball.
Danny stares at him.
Please tell me you know you mix two sports in your metaphor. I can't do that.
Danny bolts for the house.
Danny, please, I need your help.
Someone's going to die. A stranger or me. Which would you rather?
Look, if I can do the job successfully, I'm free and clear. Free and clear, Danny. Okay. I have enough money saved up to retire to a beautiful little Greek island with beautiful little Greeks. Heaven awaits me, Danny, if you and I do this job.
I can't.
Oh, damn it, Danny. You're my only friend.
Oh, Julian.
It's true. And...
Julian puts his hands to his head.
And what?
And... You owe me.
Inside the house.
If this were to happen, when would it take place?
Today. The horse races.
Today?
Yeah, in Arizona.
No, that couldn't happen, Julian.
Sorry, right? No choice.
No. Today is the 4-year anniversary of my son Henry's death. We go to the cemetery, that's what we do.
What time is the cemetery closed, Danny?
Well, I don't know.
We'll have you back here 4:30, flowers in hand, I promise you.
Oh, you'll do that, okay. Well, how will you do that, Julian?
Well, we had a 7:40 plane reservation to Tucson this morning. Plenty of time to catch the 2:30 back.
We do?
Mm-hmm. I made it yesterday. First class. Real fancy. Now, chop, upstairs, get dressed, make a story up the pain. We've got to get this road on the show. Hey, Danny.
Julian goes, switching off the kitchen light. In big letters, Tucson. At a racetrack, the starting gate rises and the competitors gallop off around the track. I never meant to be so bad to you. Both sporting dark glasses and moustaches, Danny and Julian walk down a narrow airport corridor side by side. On the track, the races continue. In a concessions area at the back of the grandstand, racetrack punters are placing bets and loading themselves up with food and drink. Julian dips his hand into a bag of popcorn and looks around. He and Danny are standing apart, as if they didn't know each other. At a look from Julian, Danny goes over and leans against a wall, next to an exit door that says, in big red letters, "Alarm will sound." Julian goes over to a pillar where a circuit breaker box is mounted. Standing close by are a couple of racetrack security guards in black uniforms. Julian takes off his dark glasses and looks back at Danny, who also checks out the security guards. Julian touches his nose. Danny yawns, stretches, and accidentally on purpose knocks the crash bar to the exit door. The door opens, the alarm sounds, and security guards come running. While they're distracted, Julian opens the circuit box and clips some wires. Danny puts his hands to his ears. He gives the guards a sheepish grin and checks over their shoulders at Julian, who goes through a pass door and down a narrow concrete stairwell. At the bottom of which, he reaches up to a row of pipes and brings down a package wrapped in a black bin liner. Carrying the wrapped black package, Julian climbs a stairwell in the grandstand until he comes to a door marked "Roof Access, Do Not Enter." This door too is marked "Alarm Will Sound." Julian opens it. He disappears inside. He takes off his rings. In the grandstand, Danny has bought 4 large drinks at a kiosk. He balances them in a cardboard tray and makes his way down through the stand. Above him, Julian has assembled his gun and lines up the telescopic sights on a silver-haired man sitting with a young woman and a black man in a dark suit. An official dressed as a hunt master trumpets the start of the next race. Danny makes his way through the wide rows of the massive grandstand, all of which have tables and chairs which are not fixed to the floor. Below on the track, the horses are pushed into the pens at the starting gate. In a section of roof space which houses several floodlights and overlooks the grandstand, Julian tweaks the crosshairs of his sight to try to avoid the silver-haired man's black companion. Horses and riders burst out from the starting gate. Danny makes his way towards Julian's silver-haired target and his two companions. His eye to the telescopic sight, Julian lines up his best shot and waits. Danny comes level with the target and deliberately spills his tray of beer over the black man, who leaps to his feet. Julian has a clear shot. He squeezes the trigger. Again in the crosshairs of his sights, Julian sees himself standing alone in the middle of the empty bullring. He straightens up from the rifle, breathing hard. He closes his eyes and bows his head. Down on the track, the race is over.
Julian! Hey! Julian!
Danny comes along the walkway of the grandstand roof space. Ahead of him, he sees Julian's rifle. Next to it, a cigarette burning down to its butt.
Julian!
He runs down the grandstand staircase.
Julian!
Julian is sitting on the floor, staring out through the bars of the staircase at the empty track. Danny raises his arms in frustration.
Julian? Hey! What the hell is going on? Julian!
Julian looks up as if he's only just become aware of Danny and smiles.
You dragged me out to Arizona? To the goddamn horse races? To do this job, right? To do this job, this one last job. To kill somebody that I don't even know so that you can live out the rest of your life with Greeks. Beautiful little Greeks, Danny. And I do everything perfectly. Not you, me. Perfectly. Did you see me, Julian? I was brilliant. And you get a clean shot. I know you had a clean shot. And you don't take it. What's going on?
I've lost it.
Oh, really? Well, they're going to kill you, Julian.
But I've lost it.
That's an unacceptable answer.
But it's the truth.
Oh, jeez. Hey. Concentrate here, okay? I need you to concentrate.
Just look at me, Danny. Look at me. I'm a wreck. I'm a parody.
Julian, you got to go up there.
Oh, no. Just leave me alone, Danny. Please, just forget everything.
I can't believe I'm in a stairwell trying to convince you to assassinate somebody.
Just go, Danny.
Julian gestures helplessly on the verge of tears. Danny turns away, looks out over the track, raises his eyes to heaven, then looks back at the pitiful figure on the floor beside him.
No, we're gonna do this.
Julian shakes his head.
My God.
Julian, you have to. Hey, you have to, okay? If you don't, they're going to kill you. You understand me?
You understand?
And I won't let that happen. Huh? I refuse to let that happen. How about that? We're going to go up there together. I'm going to talk you through it. Okay? I'm going to talk you right through it. And you're going to do the job that you came here to do.
Julian smiles weakly.
Okay? All right? Huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, okay.
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 All right. Up.
There you go.
Okay?
And you're going to stay up there with me.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And you're going to talk me through it.
That's right.
They climb the stairs.
Thank you.
All right, then. Let's go kill this motherfucker already and get the hell out of here.
Okay.
An image of Julian in blue shorts and yellow T-shirt leaping into the air holding two blue and yellow cheerleaders' pom-poms bleaches to white. Later, Julian sits in the window seat of a plane with Danny sitting beside him, munching airline snack food. Julian looks seriously across at Danny.
Thank you. No, really, I mean it. I was a mess back there. You helped me. You helped me a lot.
Danny shrugs wryly.
You know, I think I can handle the deviant, Julian. I can handle the lying, Julian. I can even handle the killing, Julian. I just don't know if I can handle the humble pie, Julian.
Well, enjoy it. It won't last.
That's a given.
Really, it's no problem. You said it yourself. I owed you.
Do you think if you hadn't opened the door late that night in Mexico City, the two of us would be sitting on this plane now?
Probably not.
A flashback to the hotel in Mexico.
Come on, Danny. I just want to say I'm sorry. I know it's late and I'm a little fucked up, but I'm sorry. Can't you see how guilty I feel? Danny! Danny!
Hold on, Julian. I'm coming.
Danny knocks his beer bottle onto the floor. Later, Julian sits on the hotel bed.
I don't know what I'll do if I don't get this job.
Danny sits down next to him.
And you're sure if I kill off this Cardenas guy, you'll get the contract?
He's our only competition.
And you can live with that?
Yeah.
You can live with that blood on your hands,
Is that what people do? Don't people, successful people, always live with blood on their hands?
Julian swigs at his beer. Back in the plane.
You became my friend that night, Julian. You became my lifelong friend.
Back in the Mexico hotel room, they sit side by side at the end of the bed. Julian leans forward, resting his arms on his knees, and nods, woozily, but decisively.
I'm not going to do it for you. You're making a late night, exhausted, desperate decision, and if I did it, you would regret it instantly and feel nothing but guilt and shame for the rest of your life, believe me.
I'm so scared, Julian.
Guys like you, you think you have no luck, but you have all the luck in the world. You just need to see it. She's at home waiting for you.
Danny stares into his lap.
If I did that job for you, your luck would run bad for the rest of your days.
Julian takes out his pack of cigarettes.
You don't really do it anyway. I know you don't. You're not that type of person.
Danny watches him fumble with his lighter.
That's why I like you. You're the exact opposite of me.
Danny looks away. Back on the plane.
You surprised me that night.
I surprised myself.
Danny shakes his head, takes off his glasses, and cleans them.
Guess your boss must be satisfied, right? Completed the assignment. No longer on the hit list.
Well, I'm no longer on the hit list, but I didn't do any assignment.
Danny gives him a puzzled frown.
I don't understand. I thought your boss wanted you to do this job.
Julian leans in confidentially.
My boss, Mr. Stick. He was the job.
Danny looks Julian squarely in the face.
You mean we just killed
him? We killed the man who wanted to kill me. Problem solved.
He waves a dismissive hand and grins. Danny grins too.
You.
And punches Julian on the shoulder.
Son of a bitch.
Among many other things. Don't ever hit me again.
Sorry.
The picture bleaches to white. In a snow-covered cemetery in Denver, Danny and Bean, wrapped up against the cold, crouch in front of a grave holding hands. A few feet away, Julian stands by the side of Danny's car, watching them with a mixture of sympathy, admiration, and affection. Danny puts his hand tenderly to Bean's face. Julian smiles wistfully, reaches into his leather coat, and takes out an airline ticket folder decorated with the word Greece and photos of white buildings beneath a blue sky. He tucks it under the windscreen wiper of Danny's car with a look of satisfaction. He starts to walk away. At the side of the road, he stops and looks back, his reflection framed in the car's wing mirror. Beyond the bonnet of the car, Danny and Bean, still crouching at the graveside, are unaware of his going. Julian walks on. Filling the screen in red letters on a white background, The Matador. This audio description was produced by IMS for Buena Vista Home Entertainment. DVD production was by Aquari. Unit Production Manager Adam J. Merrins. Unit Production Manager Mexico Arturo Del Rio. First Assistant Director Richard L. Fox. Cast in order of appearance. Julian Noble, Pierce Brosnan. Radio DJ Arlen Miller. Young Denver Fling Azucena Medina. 10-year-old boy Gerardo Manjares. 10-year-old boy's mother Viveca Bonerais. Danny Wright, Greg Kinnear. Carolyn Bean Wright, Hope Davis. Phil Garrison, Adam Scott. Genevieve, Portia Dawson. Skinny Mexican Man, Roberto Sosa. Hotel Bartender 1, Antonio Zavala. Shooting Stand Owner, Ramon Alvarez. Schoolgirl, Luz Maria Molina. Mr. Randy, Philip Baker Hall. Cantina Turistas, Carolyn Horvitz, Rachel Schwartz. Hotel Bartender 2, Jorge Robles. Hotel Lobby Musicians, Trio Los Rivera. The Matador, Israel Díez. Fat Man, Guillermo Ruiz. Fat Man's Girlfriend, Annie Sens. Flirting Woman at Outdoor Cafe, Gabriela Goldsmith. Vienna Fling, Claudia Lobo. Australian Bar Waitress, Maureen Muldoon. Budapest Ballerinas, Berenice Alvarado, Adriana Davila, Sylvia Ennis, Deborah Rocha, Carla Salvador, Isabel Villa. Lovell, the Man in the Catholic Church, Dylan Baker. Manila Target, Arturo Echeverria. Young Julian in Manila, Ramon Valverde. Mr. Stick, William Raymond. Additional Matadors, Alejandro Amaya, José Luis Angelino, Guillermo Capetillo, Humberto Flores, José Mauricio Moret, Federico Pizarro. Songs, A Town Called Malice, written by Paul Weller, performed by The Jam. 1234, written by E. Acevedo, J. de la Cueva, D. Gantz, J. Lede, B. Meyer, performed by Titan. Contains a sample of Satan's Theme, performed by Satan's Pilgrims. Quiere Que, performed by Trio Los Rivera. Sinaloa, written by Daniel Indart, performed by Banda La Estrella. Dorado, Bandido y No Te Rayes, all written by Daniel Indart, and performed by María Chira Estrella. Yo Te Amo Mucho, and That's That, written by Javier Thugat, Irvin Drake, Sam Stepped, performed by Javier Thugat and his orchestra, courtesy of Warner Brothers Pictures. A Mi Guitarra, written and performed by Daniel Indart. Garbage Man, written by Interior and Arosha, performed by The Cramps. Bahía Blanca, written by Daniel Indart, performed by Ramon Fernaro. Tierra Andaluz, written by Rafael Bascon. Malagueña Traditional, produced by Nick South. It's Not Unusual, written by Gordon Mills and David Reed, performed by Tom Jones. Amparito Roca, written by Jaime Texidor. Hunt Quartet Adagio, written by Joseph Haydn. In the Wee Small Hours of the Morning, written by Bob Hilliard and David Mann, performed by Dave Van Norden. Heat of the Moment, written by John Wetton and Jeffrey Downs, performed by Aisha. All These Things That I've Done, written and performed by The Killers. El Matador, written by Flavio Chancharulo, performed by Los Fabulosos Cadillacs. This motion picture was shot entirely on location in Mexico City. The filmmakers do not condone bullfighting but respect its long tradition in Mexican culture. No bulls were harmed in the making of The Matador. Bullfighting sequences staged by the producers employed fake and computer-generated bulls exclusively. In association with Arclight Films, Stratus Film Company, Equity Pictures. For my dad, who loved movies.